Good morning. Good morning. We're mixing the schedule up today. We have the mayor of New Bedford.
Keep everybody on their toes. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Mayor. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Busy week this week.
Yes, sir.
Yep. People are talking about the assassination.
Yes. Yeah, people are talking about the assassination. Yeah, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I'll just weigh in and just say it's deeply concerning. Mm-hmm. And I should all be glad that nobody got hurt. Remember the attempt on, then presidential candidate, Trump, a couple of years ago in Pennsylvania, at that rally in Pennsylvania, where he barely, the guy barely missed him,
right.
but there was one of the people in the audience died, which is awful. At least that didn't happen this time around. But yeah, it's kind of scary. I don't think there's. I can't think of any other president that has experienced that, a 3 assassination attempt. And whatever you think of President Trump, and that's just the people have to. I think everybody should make clear that this is just unacceptable in a democracy. I'm a little surprised that he got as close as he did. I guess he rushed the stage, but. The Secret Service can't let their guard down, but it's also very hard to protect the president. I mean, this president, any other one would want to be out in public a lot and interact with people, and that's an important part of the job. But that's growing harder. We don't want the president have to like travel around in a pulp mobile all the time,
right.
to engage with people. But it was another fairly close call.
Yeah, we have mayor.
Totally unacceptable. That is my. We should not. This stuff should not be normalized.
No, it really shouldn't be. And it's becoming a little more normal these days, unfortunately. We have the mayor of New Bedford uniquely here on a Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. Mayor, you've been around a lot of dignitaries like presidents. It is amazing. Friends, I've stayed in a hotel similar to this situation where Dick Cheney was speaking. He happened to be the vice president at the time. And I got in the hotel, didn't look in my bags, nothing. So when they were talking about it, I thought, that's been
they're
my experience too.
As you look right? Like that. Boy, they must have really had their guard down.
I was using the code name Scooter Libby, though. So that used to be my out-of-town name, Scooter Libby. But Mayor, yeah, there's...
You see it at events. I mean, I've been to events where... The president, the vice president have spoken, and the Secret Service does take precautions. They don't mess around with it, but you can only make it so restrictive,
right?
Like, who wants to go to an event once you frisk just to get in and listen to a speech? I mean, you'd say, well, maybe I'll just watch the speech on social media or TV or
right.
something.
Yeah. Right, which is, yeah. Well, we got too much of that.
Yeah.
Not enough leaving the house.
Yeah, not enough
already.
Personal interaction. You know, and I have to tell you, I mean, it's not just the president. It's other officials, including mayors, that have to deal with
of course.
A heightened threat environment. And it's not good. We do have a growing problem of political violence in America. And
you've been to Israel.
Yes. Went
to Israel and you told, correct me if I'm wrong, they assassinate local officials over there. Not the Israelis, but the local officials.
That's true there. I think if you want to look at a place where there's a lot of local officials assassinated, just look over the border in Mexico.
There have been
dozens of mayors in the last couple of decades that have been assassinated.
Yep, that's right.
Mostly by the cartels. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine who would want to serve in local government with local government's constraints on budgetary constraints to pay for security. There are lots of mayors in the United States that have 24-hour security, but they're the bigger cities and they're the ones that can afford it. But yeah, I can tell you just hearing stories. We deal with what we have to deal with here with the police department. I think if we think that it needs to be more, we'll do that. Not just for me, but other elected officials. But I've been somewhat surprised by the experience of other mayors around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
in the level of threats, including it's worse for female elected officials, female mayors. That's for whatever reason, they seem to be the subject of more explicit threats. I don't know what it is, but it's there's clearly a difference in the threat levels, or at least what's verbalized to female electeds, specifically female mayors, than males. Look, it's deeply disconcerting, and what I say to folks is that, you know, when we make casual comments, when one makes a casual comment on social media about whatever, whatever threats are out, making threats or just insinuating something, it does fuel things. I mean, we did have, you know, that indictment of Jim Comey this week, which, you know, having been in that business, I think that is a prosecutable threat. I think it was an irresponsible comment, though.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the kind of stuff that shouldn't be said.
Yeah, but immature.
Yeah, for sure. And among others, just certainly irresponsible for a guy who had headed up the FBI to be insinuating that. I'm not sure it's a viable case, because it doesn't. I think it kind of lacks the specificity necessary to satisfy the elements of the statute, but yeah, totally irresponsible.
Yeah. We have the mayor of New Bedford uniquely here.
On a
Thursday morning.
Yeah, Thursday.
Kicking off the show.
It's kind of dreary outside. It's good to be inside.
Not a bad day to be a duck.
Not a bad day to be a duck.
Right.
For sure.
Mayor, I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. When we come back, we got a whole bunch of stuff. We got the new police station, the study just came out.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
We got that to talk about. We got city budget. We got Roach, Just, Jones, Dope.
The dope, huh? That's not that.
Roach.
Duff, not
Duff.
Dope.
I don't know. Anyway.
Just call it the RJD.
Yes, the RJD. And of course, calls. We got calls already there waiting for you, Mayor.
All right.
So stick around. We'll be right back.
It's time to make the money talk for $5,000 Thursday. 378. 378. Enter it right now at WBSM.com or on the WBSM app for your chance to make the money talk on WBSM.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. It's midweek with the mayor. It's a little different time, a little different day, but the mayor is here, and guess what? He brought donuts. So periodically, I'll be letting the mayor just go on so I can stuff donuts in my mouth.
Keep the carbs coming, Chris.
Yes, keep the carbs coming, and of course, the espresso as well. The mayor turned down espresso, though.
I turned. That was from Tim.
Yeah.
Does he have a machine in his office?
Yeah. Well, it's in the kitchen, but
it's in the kitchen. Is that a new thing? This was the first time I was offered espresso.
Right.
Because
it normally comes out at the 9 o'clock hour.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The company provides, and Tim does the espresso making for me.
Wow. Does he wear like a little hat?
Hat is not required, Mayor. As long as the espresso comes out on time, hat is not required. I've said to everybody.
A little French beret or something.
This place would fall down without Tim, mostly me.
I know it would.
Right? Absolutely. So, speaking of falling down places and building new buildings.
He can hear all of this.
Yeah. And he'll decide whether it goes on the podcast, Mayor, so we got to be careful. Building for the future, the police station.
Yeah, police headquarters. So let me talk about two things. So what I see is the need, but also how, when we can fund it. So there's we've talked about it before. Cities have to reinvest in themselves, and so New Bedford over the years has not done that. We have talked a lot about the roadways that I think have that are supposed to last when they're paved, they're supposed to last 50 to 70 years. And so for a long time, many decades, the city did not consistently fund them. But it was true of schools, too. So schools, we had the oldest stock when I got into office. We had the oldest stock of elementary schools in the state. And I looked at it and I said, well, you know, we've got to continue to move new school projects along because as things get older, they cost more to keep up and they can become antiquated and for their modern purposes. And then the same goes with like the fire department. We have the oldest set of firehouses in the state. That's my understanding. And so that's why we built the new one in the South End. And we want to continue to do that. The police facilities are maybe even more glaring because we have a police headquarters that we had a police headquarters that was built over 100 years ago for the downtown. That was raised when what's now the DeMello International Center was built. It was originally Compass Bank's headquarters. Right. So, but that was 27 years ago, 1999, 2000-ish, right around there. And so the city at the time said, well, we'll put the police in the former Fernandes supermarket temporarily. Well, it's been over a quarter century now. So I just think that, you know, that's too long to wait, mm-hmm. and that's not temporary, and we need to move forward with a new police headquarters, modern police headquarters. We're way overdue for that. The condition of that building, the building's just not set up safely for a police headquarters. We've invested in it to make it more safe, but in the long run, you really need a new building that's designed for that purpose. So we did a study, and the study came back. We wanted a place, I think it has to be a place that's somewhat centrally located in the city, ideally on city-owned land. So we ended up going to Cogswell Street, which is, I mean, it's not surprising because that's been sort of the place that everybody, but a lot of people have said, hey, what about right there? It's right at the end of 18. It's on the city-owned land right there. So, but the study came back with a thorough analysis that sort of validated the intuition. It said, yes. Well, that's the best place. So I think it's a good thing. It's like we wanted this thing to be done so our police are well equipped to do their job. And so, you know, the question is now, well, how are you going to pay for it? Because they're not cheap.
No.
We don't, like some cities in Massachusetts have done consolidated police and fire department headquarters. I asked both chiefs about that. I don't think anybody thinks that that's what's necessary here. There isn't. You put a police headquarters in some place that's central. You put fire stations. You locate fire stations in relation to one another, mm-hmm. but also in relation to where fires are most likely to occur, because unlike police don't deploy from a fixed location, they patrol.
Right.
Fighters deploy from a fixed location. They deploy from the stations, and so you got to locate the station where the fires might occur, and not like too close to another fire station. They're going to be sort of evenly distributed. So that's the, so we're not going down, I don't think it makes sense to go down that line. But in any event, so, you know, how do you pay for something like that? It's because it's like in today's dollars, it's probably around close to $100 million, maybe a little bit less than that, but it's expensive. I think we have to decide like how quickly we're going to move on this, right? I would like to move on it really quickly, but no, we do have, as we've discussed before, a tough budget reality
right.
this year. So launching into a design exercise this year might be difficult because the design is designing a building like that's not an insignificant cost for a building of that size.
Right.
It's a few million dollars. And so we have to have that discussion with the city council. But what I'm hoping with that study to do with that study is to say, okay, let's just settle on a location. That's the location.
Right.
And so at least that puts a flag in the ground there, and then the city can figure out over time how quickly we want to move on that. You know, I don't want to wait indefinitely. We don't want to wait indefinitely in these things, but at least
costs just go up.
Costs just go up, and so that's where it is right now. But I think we'll have more to say in the budget, of course, as we get closer to the budget season. But it may be hard to launch a design process this year, given some of our other budget constraints.
Oh, you're in the design process.
The design. Design. So the way these things work is, you found a location. And by the way, I should say, because that property abuts state land, that abuts the highway, there may be a need to acquire some of the state land. The state,
sure.
I think the state, I'm confident that the state would be able to deed some of that, enough land for that, to that site, to allow for more parking and such. So, but that's another thing that another block will have to check. The way it works is that design would take, after you procure the design, you put out a request for proposals, designers come in and bid and say, you should go with us because we're the most qualified, and here's how much it'll cost. And then they go do the design. When somebody's picked, they go do the design. And that process is probably about a year and a half to 2 years.
Sure.
And then from there, construction, you put the construction out to bid. That's probably another two and a half years or so by the time you open up the building. So it's going to take a few years, and how the city funds that. We'll fund it with borrowing, by issuing bonds, as we do with other things that we build. But when those bonds come due, it will be a few years out. But that's we're going to have to forecast how well the city, at what point the city can afford to start doing it. But we got to do it. So if it's 3 years from now or 5 years from now, whatever it is, we have to figure that out. And this having a location now is a big first step in that direction.
If you're
at long last,
if you're wondering why you're hearing the mayor of New Bedford, because the mayor's segment has been moved to Thursday at 9 a.m. So, Mayor, my question is, do you anticipate being the mayor who cuts the ribbon at the new police headquarters?
Well, that's a tough question, Chris.
Is it really?
I kind of walked into it, didn't
you?
I
did, yeah.
I thought you wouldn't notice. I think it's that espresso that
it is.
You have.
You're
on, you're
I'm
on
not normally
you're
this,
on your game
yes,
right now.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, who would know if you don't?
I don't think anybody knows. I don't know. That's a few years out. That's quite a ways out. We'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
508-996-0500 city budget. We can segue right into that now. What's happening? We're hearing a lot of stuff that you got your city council all scared. They're all running around. They're all scared. Nobody's sure exactly what's going on. I know you've been briefing some of them who've come in.
Yeah, most of them have come in.
They have.
Then I think that's good because it's facilitated the discussion. But the reality is, and we've talked about it last week, we should continue to talk about it because I really want to facilitate the public's understanding of this, but we're reaching a bit of a boiling point. Mm-hmm. We have been talking for years about certain pressures on the city budget. State aid is not kept up. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. I will repeat that in the previous fiscal year, we got less state aid than we did in 2008. Think about that. Right. If your income stayed the same from 2008 to 2026, you'd have a tough time paying your bills.
Yep.
Right. So that is a huge reality. And the state has slowly gotten out of the business of providing state aid to cities and towns. Like, why one might say, well, why do they have to do that? Well, the reality is that we when we provide services to people, it's for not just the residents of New Bedford. It's for everybody who might come to New Bedford or otherwise rely on New Bedford.
Sure.
So, for instance, if you're somebody who goes to a Zyterian show, right, you want to make sure that things are safe around the Zyterian.
Right.
Therefore, and who makes the Zyterian safe? It's the New Bedford police.
Right.
You go out to eat, right? Right. To come. Or if you, I'm obviously oversimplifying it, but if your car is, if you own property in New Bedford.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably paying taxes anyway. That may not be a good example, but I mean, there's a whole the drive on the roads of New Bedford. If you there's lots of examples of services that we provide whose benefits accrue to people who don't live in the city. And so having, and that's true, and it's in reverse. Like, so if you go to, if you live in the city and you go to the mall, the shop, you want to make sure your car isn't broken into. Right. Who provides that service? Well, that's the Dartmouth police. And, right. And guess what? Dartmouth gets state aid too, that helps off, that pays for that benefit. So the state does need to be involved in paying for municipal services, and the reality is that we're struggling. We are really, and we're not alone. I mean, you've heard from all the surrounding towns; they're saying the same thing. Surrounding towns are laying off people. There's layoffs in Middleborough not too long ago, and other places as well. You'll see more of that as in the next month as more places propose their budgets. So that's a big part of it. Our pension system is woefully underfunded. And out of the 100, I think it's 105 pension systems in the state, we're the sixth least funded. And so what that has meant, and we my time in office, have dutifully paid what we've had to pay into that system.
Right.
And we've faithfully done that. But we inherit a big liability, and that's a hard thing for us to pay for, and we've got to pay for it all. We have to do all the catch-up payments by 2035. Mm-hmm. So that means every year that number goes up and up and up, and that's gotten more expensive. Healthcare, more expensive. We have not adopted healthcare reform in the city, which is unfortunate, even though, as you know, I have tried to put that in front of the city council. I will put it forward again.
You will, okay.
But that's... I'm not going to be put in front of them, and this isn't. There's some of these things I think we could have, like with healthcare. I think that's something the city council could have done something about. State aid, you know, that's not right. That's not the city council. And I'm not looking to blame the city council for things. Although I do think we do need to have a very, very honest discussion about the current budget with the city council, and I'm glad that at least now it'll be seven councilors who will come in to talk directly to us. Of the 11. So healthcare is another big one. Contributions to our school system is another big driver. Our schools are basically paid for by the state.
Right.
And because the state, in the case of state education aid, has been more generous in recent years, that's a good thing because I think the schools need it, but it's forced us to contribute more. On that front, you know, people will say, and I've heard callers come in and say, you know, Mayor, the city budget has gone up by whatever, how many millions of dollars in your time in office. Well, that is so much of that is the pass-through of state education aid to the schools. The state pays about 85% of the school system. The school system now accounts for more than 60% of the total city budget. And so, like what you're the growth you're seeing in the overall number is just taken and passed. We can only use that money for the school system.
Right.
We can't say, well, we're going to go plant trees in the park with that money. We can't do that.
No, you go to jail.
So right. So that's what we. I think that accounts for. I think a lot of people just haven't understood that and been insistent. Well, why is the budget growing?
Yes.
So it's a long way of saying that something's got to give, and there's very little play in the joints because so much of the budget, the school department, the healthcare, and pensions are very difficult to change. So that leaves the operating departments, and so there's not a lot to give there because the reality is we're about 100 employees less than we were about 15 years ago, and on the city side of the ledger as opposed to the school side. So it's not like we've been growing positions. I think sometimes you hear that from the council and it's like, well, that's actually not true. Just look at the numbers. That's not the case. So I think I'm glad. I don't mean to scare the council. I think what we're trying to do is convey to them that two things, that there is a reality here that's coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. And that we've got to work together.
Yeah, I think that's the important part, right,
yeah.
Mayor?
Yeah.
And for you've had some real personality changes on that council. So you've had some other councilors been able to get information, step forward, things like that. And so some of them are learning for the first time about the budget.
Some of them are, and that's okay.
I know.
I want to facilitate that understanding. I don't expect them to be totally versed in municipal finance just a few months onto the job. But I think that's we want to make sure all their questions are answered, and that we can work together toward a solution, and just to be able to explain to the residents of the city why this is difficult now.
What sort of things have the council been maybe agreeing with you? And I recognize it's a long negotiation, it's kind of a long conversation, but have you seen any movement towards any of your proposed solutions in the past with this budget now?
The discussions with the councilors have been like this. We've shown them like the huge gap in revenue and costs, right? Costs have just been going up much, much faster. And that there aren't easy solutions, and that we've invited the councilors to come up with their best ideas. And, you know, some of them in the past have not really worked. So, for instance, cutting things like our Social Security payment obligations for city employees, we can't do that, right? So there are some legally mandated costs that we just have. Because they're legally mandated, we have to discharge, or else we'll do it the easy way or do it the hard way. We'll get sued by somebody we owe money to, right? So and lose. So you can't do that. But it's really an invitation to them to say, okay, well, let's come up. Please come up with your best idea. If we're missing something, we want to know about it.
We have the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell, here this morning, Thursday at 9 a.m. A little different from his regular schedule, but we're really enjoying it. Mayor, why don't we do this? We've got some people on hold.
Yeah.
Why don't we go to take a break? We'll come back. We'll go to the phones. We got a number of people on hold. Stick around. We'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 a.m. and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Before you take a swing, I wonder, what are we fighting for? When I say out loud, I wanna get out of this. I wonder, is there anything I'm gonna miss? I wonder how it's gonna be when you don't know me. How's it gonna be when you so
welcome back to the program. That's from the Mayor's Playlist. We have the Mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell, here in the studio. Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. We could maybe move the segment to this segment.
Thursday's a nice day, but how can you call it midweek with Mayor Mitchell?
We can just call it whatever we want, Mayor.
Thursday with Mayor Mitchell.
Who's going to contest it? What, are they going to write a letter to the FCC? Some of these people might.
Yeah, I don't know. But it'll throw people off.
Yeah, and we like that.
Well, it's always good to keep people on their toes.
Right.
All right, let me give it some thought. But okay. I kind of like Wednesday. Maybe just
I like Wednesday.
Force of habit, Chris.
No, I like Wednesday too, and I'm up. I'm flexible. Whatever you want to do, man.
Thank you for that, Chris.
Right. You bring donuts. You can do whatever you want. All right. Now we're going to go to the phone call. So.
All right, I'm ready.
We'll see. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, me, Mitchell.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I know it's the legislature that decides on state aid, but you've talked to the governor, right? Have you talked to her about the situation with state aid and how bad it is and what is her position?
Yeah, I have. And it's the same reaction I've gotten from legislators as well, which is, yeah, we hear you. that's about it. Look, I think you will see. I mean, we're already seeing a lot of people across a lot of municipal employees across the state being laid off, and we've seen them in this region a little bit. I mean, the ones that come to mind are Middleborough. I saw that, but I think there've been others as well. I know Fairhaven's looking at a Prop 2.5 override, which is a vote that the residents of the town have to take
in order
to raise taxes beyond the 2.5% cap. And so, you know, that's something that Fairhaven obviously will have to decide. But if my understanding of state law is, and someone can call and correct me on this, but if the override doesn't pass, then there have to be some automatic cuts to the town budget. So, you know, look, it's not easy, and I think there has to be. I think there has to be in Boston on Beacon Hill a real adult discussion on state aid and really a basic understanding of what the state's obligation is, which would include also a formula for determining the amount of state aid any given city or town gets. There is no formula in place. You say, like, how is it determined? Well, it goes back about 15 years or so to the 2008 financial crisis. The state severely cut state aid back then, and it also merged two existing programs of state aid. One was this general government aid program that gave money to cities and towns based on a formula that existed back then. And then there was the lottery aid program that gave out state aid to cities and towns based on the amount of lottery sales in the place. So they merged the two. They just said, well, we'll peg the number, the amount that they get at whatever the level was, and I think it was 2010 or so at the time of the merger. And then that figure has just escalated at a rate that's slower than inflation since then. So what that means is really two things, right? It dropped a lot back then, and then it was set at a fixed amount for every city and town, and then it hasn't kept up with inflation. Mm-hmm. And what a formula would do, so it's not based on formula. So there have been changes in the level of need, relative level of need of cities and towns across the state. So if you'd think that any formula would, for instance, include not just population, but also median household income. There are some places in the state over the last 15 years, think about like the Boston suburbs, where incomes have gone up a lot, right? Yes. And people are, Greater Boston's a very wealthy place, and it has become even more so over the last 15 years for sure. So one would argue, I'd say all else being in total fairness, those are cities and towns that don't need as much aid because they have the local capacity to pay for what they need more than, frankly, the rest of the state outside of Greater Boston. But there's no formula in place to reflect those changes. And so as a result, you've got places that are probably getting too much aid and some places that are getting less than they should. I would submit to you that New Bedford is one of those places that is getting far less than it should.
Sure, sure. Mayor, you've made some zoning changes in an attempt to jumpstart the local economy, if that's one way to look at it, in terms of development, things like that.
Well, it's more about opening things up for housing. So you just, people talk about, well, what about growth? So New Bedford's growing. It's not growing as fast as Greater Boston, but frankly, there's not much of America that's growing as fast as Greater Boston. People have to understand that. Right. And Boston, whether folks, I tell people every time, I know a lot of people in Boston, and I tell them is what is happening before you is we would classically call a golden age. Right? Yeah. That's what prosperity looks like. Boston is a prosperous place. And it's true of a lot of other major metros in America. I talk about it all the time, that there is a very different experience in the major metros in America with America's knowledge-based economy. It centers around research institutions and universities and international airports and so forth and other assets and just sheer density. And that's why I would submit one of the reasons why there is such a big political divide in the country. There's a geographic divide that coincides with it as between big metros and everywhere else in the country. So it's not that New Bedford's not growing. It is, but like most other cities that are not part of a major metro, are not growing at the same rate.
And
We put zoning reforms in place, and that's to primarily to deal with the constraints on the increase the housing supply in the city. We want to remove all those barriers, and those are all, I think we all agree, including the city council, that those are necessary measures, and they're moving along. But overall growth is okay, but it's not nearly fast enough.
508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. Good morning. Thank you for holding. You're on with the mayor.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
Mayor Mitchell, I see that I know New Bedford has a growing fentanyl drug problem in New Bedford. I see it on news break every day, and a gun problem. But the cops are, the police are doing a good job of getting those guns off the street. I notice every day I look at my news break and they tell you what's going on in New Bedford.
What's news break?
Well, it's on your phone. You're probably too busy, but it comes on your phone. And right away when something happens,
it's
a little red
of news stories.
Dot. Oh, really? Okay. I'll check it out.
It comes on. It's Google. It comes on and it'll tell you exactly. It has the dispatch. What's going on, where it is, but they won't give you, like, if it's on, say, Hillman Street, man with a gun, they won't give you the address, but they give you those details. So as I see every day, more and more and more, and this month I've seen overdoses every day.
Oh, I dropped. Shawnee, please call back. Overdoses in the city of New Bedford. What can the mayor really do about that?
Well, we have been doing stuff about that. The number of overdoses have dropped considerably over the last 2 or 3 years, and there's still too many. And so we our health department does a lot. We have something we've had in place for a while called the Greater New Bedford Opioid Task Force, whose job is to coordinate all the efforts. The efforts include traditional interdiction by law enforcement. In other words, you go arrest the dealers, right? It's emergency response by all of our emergency responders, the people who are overdosing. That's through the application of Narcan, right, to get people in place. And then there's a whole lot of this education and the school system and all that. And then the other part of it is getting people into the services they need but through follow-up, which includes having mental health professionals and substance abuse professionals go right out to people who are in need. And we've actually gotten a lot of attention about our approach as being a good one, but it's not easy. We've had to, there are a lot of people who've died and we all know people. If you live around here, you definitely know somebody. Yep. who's died as a result of a fentanyl overdose. And we keep at it, and I wish I don't have the figures at the tip of my tongue, but it's gone down a lot, both fatal and non-fatal overdoses, but it's gone down nationally as well. So it's not just New Bedford, but there's still a ways to go.
Shawnee, sorry I dropped that call. Continue. The mayor just answered on the overdose stuff. You had a gun question.
Did you hear my answer, Shawnee? I don't know if that was
I
your
heard
question.
It very loud and clear. So just another question, on the fire station, I know it says on Newsbreak, it says Cogswell Street is the area, but do you have any idea?
The police station, not the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure you're going to put it together like you did down South End, right?
No, we talked about that. No, we're not going to do that. It's just going to be police.
But whereabouts, I'm trying to figure out whereabouts you would be putting it. Do you have a vague idea?
Yeah, so corner of 18 and Cogswell. You know where the Golden Greek is?
Yeah.
Right there, right across the street.
So you own what property there, where the Packer is?
Yeah, all of that. Yep.
You're going to put it there?
Yeah.
Okay, next time you come in, bring a violin. Thank you.
Bring a violin? I don't know how to play.
Please don't bring a violin. Unless you get lessons.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
I'm going to have to start taking lessons. When do I have the time for that?
We do. I don't know. But all right. That's pretty
funny. I wish I could play the violin.
No.
I don't play any instrument, Chris.
Which is surprising me. I remember my cousins were all trying to get into Harvard and Duke and places like that. They all knew how to play instruments or anything like that.
Yeah.
You never bothered with any of that.
Well, yeah.
I remember seeing it. I don't want to go to Ivy League schools. If I got to do all that, marching band, all that
stuff. It's never too late, I guess. So, you know, that was a really good, I guess you have to go. That was a good suggestion,
yes.
Charnine. So maybe, how much do they cost? How much does a good violin cost?
Stradivarians, probably like $200,000.
All right, so we're not doing one of those.
But a simple guitar.
I get a plastic one.
You can get a guitar at any of the pawn shops in the region.
I could do that.
Musicians have an up and down career.
She doesn't want guitar. She wants
violin.
Yeah.
Maybe we can go with
how
a harp.
How hard can it be?
Well,
there's got to be people out listening who would play the violin and tell me don't waste your time. You're not cut out for that.
I can call my cousin. She played the violin, but she went to Yale.
Well,
we don't want to deal with it. Her sister went to Harvard, though. So
okay.
These are instrument people. Yeah. That's why I thought you played an instrument.
No, you overestimate.
The French horn? Bill Buckley played the French horn.
You overestimate me, Chris. I just don't have that kind of talent.
We're going to take a break, Mayor. We got other people on hold who want to speak. This will be a short break, so we'll be right back. Stick around. Speaking of drug problems, there's the Allman Brothers.
The Allman Brothers.
Brothers.
Talented,
so, Mayor.
Talented guys.
Roach Duffhouse.
Roach Jones Duff House.
Roach Jones.
Yes, the Roaches Duff. Lived there, then the Joneses lived there, and then the Duffs moved in.
Yes.
That's hence the name. Look, it's so if you haven't been there, if you're not familiar with it, the Roach Jones Duff House is, you definitely have seen it, because everybody listening has driven down County Street at least once, but it's the big yellow mansion on County Street, the corner of Hawthorne. And or almost at just north of the corner of Hawthorne, but it is a spectacular place, and it's been well preserved for over 40 years now as a tribute to New Bedford's Wailing Glory days, and it's a site because of the beautiful gardens there and the museum. The house itself is a site for weddings and other events, and the organization that runs it does a fabulous job stewarding it. The RJD's in really good shape, and it's gotten in better shape thanks to some funding that it's been able to secure over the last several years. It got some ARPA funds a few years ago, and has done some really, really great things to modernize. I shouldn't say modernize a property because it's a preserved property, but to rehabilitate it. So beautiful new patio over there and lighting. And so if you haven't been, especially if you've got kids, that's a good place to go. I will tell you that it has become, among other uses, a site for prom pictures. I mean, all my girls who went to New Bedford High, that was like the place to go for prom pictures at New Bedford High, which is good for us because it was like, you know, just down the street from our house.
Right.
But it's beautiful, and they've come a long way, and I just wanted to give a shout out to them and all that they do, because I think it's as we get into spring and summer, it's a beautiful place to, you know, to see a big part of New Bedford's history.
We have the mayor of New Bedford here on an odd day at an odd time, but we're happy to have him here.
We like being odd.
Yeah.
What fun would it be if we weren't a little odd, Chris?
I agree with you, Mayor. I'm trying to think of what comedian that is. He's from Boston. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Two questions real quick since you're running out of time. The house that's connected to the St. Teresa's property is still not sold, and you're losing money. You're not collecting taxes, which you really don't care about, because it's much easier just to send out higher tax bills to all the people in the city than to try to manage the city efficiently. And the other question I have is, what ticket do you have in your pocket right now for an upcoming event at the Zeiterion? And at that, I'll leave it to get back to
you. Wait, you don't have to go. What ticket?
Yeah, what ticket do you have in your pocket for an upcoming event at the Zeiterion?
I don't know what you mean.
You purchase a ticket to go to the Zeiterion. What ticket have you purchased for an upcoming event?
I don't know. I don't think I have one.
Yeah, neither does the rest of the city either. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
That was a little cryptic. Mayor.
Yeah, so the house next to St. Teresa's, the city's in the process of selling. There's a problem with title, and they have to... it's a legal issue that came about. I mean, this gentleman did call at some point in the last few months to raise it, and we did act on it. And there is a legal title issue that has to get worked out. That's my understanding, but I'll check in on this.